I would take any ring, any sport, love it equally as much. Like, I think Cleveland Gladiators are making a run in the Arena League right now.
I'm like the 18, 19-year-old kid who recently lost his virginity and thinks he knows everything about the world of women now.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special brief tangent. My name is Christian. I'm the curator of the Morning Brief. I also like to talk about things, which is what we're doing right now. And today I'm going to have a set of guests on that have lived through lives of a tortured sports fan, shall we say. These are three gentlemen who are very into sports, passionate about the teams they support, but have grown up in Kansas City, Seattle, and of course Cleveland, respectively. So their 20 some odd years have been rough at best. However, each of them is looking at a period of potential happiness and a chance to turn around the fortunes and experience some things they never have before or recently have experienced things that they never had previously. The first guest that is joining me today is a good friend of mine. His name is James Miners, and he is from the great state of Missouri, specifically the Kansas City region. James, how are we doing today?
Doing well, and I'm especially happy that you noted I'm from Missouri and not Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at this point people should know that there's KCK and KC Mo, but people are completely oblivious to this fact.
They are, and they're often confused how a city can be in two states at once.
Well, it is a little bit confusing. You guys should just make up your mind, but I think that's a different conversation, yeah?
Yeah.
What if there was like a fight, KC Mo would just destroy KC Kansas? Is that how that would go down?
I'd say number-wise, Missouri has the advantage. Okay. The Kansans would probably fight dirty, though.
The Kansans would fight dirty, as they have been doing for a long time, right? Is that like a Kansas thing?
Yeah, I think the war goes back 150 years.
The war? There's a war going on?
There is a subset of the Civil War fought between Missouri and Kansas.
Wow. Yep. Well, we all know how that turned out. I don't know which side was which, but the good side won, I take it.
Yep, that's all I'm going to say.
All right, James. So you, being from Kansas City, Missouri. Gosh, now you got me all bass backwards. Have been a supporter of a couple of professional teams that have, would you say, torn your heart out on multiple occasions?
Multiple, absolutely.
So I think the first question I want to ask you is, are you excited about this year's version of the Royals and where they stand right now?
It's so painful to say, but I am so excited.
So for those of you that may not be educated, the Royals are currently sitting in first place
by half a game,
the American League Central. And should this hold for the last quarter of the season, it would mark the first time the Royals have made the playoffs in your lifetime?
In my life and in 29 years.
The first time they've made the playoffs in almost three decades.
Since we won the World Series.
Oh, God, that is just rough, man. So, a question. With the two wild card thing, would you be disappointed if they only got one of those wild cards, or would you count that as a playoff berth?
So that's actually been a big topic of conversation amongst, like, the Kansas City sports media, and I think everybody looks at it as a worst-case scenario, actually. Because we don't view it as an actual playoff appearance, but it means that Dayton Moore and Ned Yost absolutely get to keep their jobs because they say they made the playoffs.
Yeah, so you are you part of the fire the guys at the top crew in the Royals, or are you part of the believe in the process?
I'm a part of the Dayton Moore had Jeff Francoeur be our starting right fielder for like 2.5 years. He's not a general manager.
But you guys are winning. Come on.
We are.
Let's look at the positives here. This is better than, like, the Mike Sweeney era.
That's very true, yeah. We're actually doing things, which is exciting. We don't know how we're winning, but it's happening.
Is this the most excited you've been since the Lima time Royals of 2003 or whatever that was?
That was the 2003 Royals when Jose Lima was incredible and Angel Baroa was your AL Rookie of the Year. I was actually so excited that the next that year for in Spanish class, I went by Angel. I was that big of a supporter.
You went by Angel.
I would say so. The end of last season was really exciting, even though it became pretty obvious we weren't going to make the playoffs. But there was a little bit of excitement then too.
Because you guys won like a few more games than you lost, right?
A few, yeah. We had a winning record for second time in my life, and second time since 2000 at least.
So you've won more games than you've lost twice in the last 15 years.
Yep.
And you haven't made the playoffs in 30 years.
So you brought up how much of the season is actually still left.
Yeah.
The Royals have already won more games this season than in, I believe, 6 of the last 13.
With 40 games left to play.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to get a little, like, psychological. How do you deal with like, the losing? Like, how did you deal with that as a kid? Because I would say, at least for myself, I was more fanatic when I was maybe, like, you know, 14, 15. Like, that was kind of the peak of really caring. And I would assume, like, that into, like, early 20s is kind of when it happens the most. So, like, when that was going on and, gosh, you were believing in, like, the free agency of Jason Kendall, what was going through your mind?
It's very tough. And especially when you see a 40-year-old catcher or however old Jason Kendall was. Yeah. For a while I was a Giants fan, a San Francisco Giants fan. I would still root for the Royals because they were my AL team. But the best way to describe it is you're just expecting a monster around every corner. So, like, you win, like, 3 games in a row, and you're like, all right, who's about to get injured? Like, something bad is about to happen.
Oh.
And, you know, like, perfect example, you brought up Mike Sweeney earlier. We had, like, one good player on our team, and all of a sudden he can't play more than 50 games a season.
Yeah, I feel like Mike Sweeney probably is the worst, like, 8-time All-Star of all time.
Yeah, it was, we've got to pick a Royal, right?
Yeah. Mike Sweeney, he's good. He's hitting 300. Yeah. Fuck it.
And he's on the disabled list, so he won't actually have to play.
who is the greatest Royal of your childhood that's not Mike Sweeney?
Ooh. So one of my personal favorites was Tony Graffanino. Mainly because we would sign him in the offseason, he'd play well, we would trade him midseason to get players back, and then we'd sign him again the next offseason. We did this like 3 years in a row.
Oh, man, he also sounds like a small-town shifter. Tony Graffanino running around KC, like taking shady deals in barbecue joints.
I think he's actually now working in an Italian restaurant somewhere. But my actual favorite would have to be Zach Greinke.
Oh, I can't handle the spotlight, Zach Greinke?
Kind of both. Okay. It was kind of fun when he couldn't. There was one game against the Diamondbacks where he gave up something like 8 earned runs in like 5 innings. And afterwards, all he wanted to talk about was how he hit a home run, which was just fantastic. And then other times he would just mess with hitters and he would throw like a 95 mile an hour fastball and follow it up with like a 68 mile an hour curve.
Oh my.
And he didn't care whether like people would just destroy him or not. He just wanted to go out and show what he could do.
Yeah. I feel like it would be hard. I feel like it would be hard to be a really talented person. And you know, kind of like be in that grind that is the baseball season. And just have very little hope. You know, it seems like all of the guys who are good for Kansas City were like pretty good and then went elsewhere and kind of became better. So you have Greinke, you have Beltran, I guess Jermaine Dye may have had his best days in a Kansas City Royals jersey.
Oh yeah. Johnny Damon.
Wow, yeah, man,
we had a great outfield.
The former Royals was quite a thing in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
But I hope you guys turn it around. Like I think you guys have great jerseys. It seems like there's, like, you know, a lot of love in Kauffman Stadium. Is that still where you guys play?
That is.
So I'd like to see Kansas City, you know, make it back. When they held the All-Star game, everybody was very, very ravey about how lovely it was.
Except for Cano.
Yeah, Robinson Cano did not like it there. But let's switch gears a little bit and talk about another franchise that has kind of built you up just to bring you back down, the Chiefs. But there's been a little bit of success, I would say moderate success. You guys have made the playoffs in the last 30 years.
They do a different sort of routine where they make the playoffs and then just bomb out. So we've made the playoffs. I can't remember. I think we have 11 consecutive playoff losses or something like that. Wow. That number sounds high, though. We haven't won in the playoffs since, I believe, 93 or 94.
Was that the Joe Montana years? Or is that...
That was Joe Montana and Marcus Allen.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was good times. But, I mean, included in that was losing to John Harbaugh, the coach of the 49ers, as the starting quarterback of the Colts. In a game where our field goal kicker missed 3 field goals from within 35 yards, I believe.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the sort of stuff that kills you, like when it's just bad. Also included in that, I mean, not to bring up recent past, but a 4-touchdown meltdown against Andrew the Giant.
So every Kansas City fan, the whole, like, monster being around the corner was perfectly manifested in that game. Everybody who I've spoken to said that the second that that lead was cut to a 3-touchdown lead, we all knew we were going to lose.
Oh.
You're just sitting there watching it unfold.
I walked into our friend Jack Lynch's apartment in, I think it was like halfway through the third quarter or something like that. And you were up by 3 scores at that point, and Jack was freaking out. Like, exactly what you're talking about. He was just devastated already. Like, it was like, Jack, you guys are up by a lot. And he's just like, no, we're not. Not enough. 3 touchdowns, not enough. Something's going to happen. And then sure enough, it all just came crashing down.
Yeah. You know how it's going to end, and you just sit there watching it unfold, and you're just powerless to change the outcome.
Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like the Chiefs have been, like, kind of relative peaks and then, like, really intense valleys. So maybe, like, hills and valleys, not, like, peaks. But you guys have had some good runs, you know, the Trent Green, Priest Holm era. That was a good little run there. You guys have had some great fantasy running backs over that
way. Psalms, LJ Charles.
LJ. Oh, man. Yeah. J. Charles.
Yeah.
But now you got Andy Reid.
Yeah. Fat Andy Reid. It's great.
Yeah. The Kool-Aid man. And then the last little bit of your torturedness. Could you tell me some of the more devastating parts about being a University of Missouri supporter?
Yeah, so that's where Kansas City gets divided, and because the KU fans are fine because they've got Kansas basketball, they don't care about football. The Mizzou fans aren't quite as lucky. We've never really made it that far in football. That 2007 season was probably the best thing we've ever experienced.
Chase Daniel, Fat Ben Roethlisberger, which shouldn't really be a thing, but yeah.
Yeah, right. And then Missouri basketball, where we've never made a Final Four, but we've made something like 4 or 5 Elite Eights.
Oh, Phil Pressey, Quinn Snyder. Gosh, the greats.
Ricky Paulding is the true. If you're a big Missouri fan, you know Ricky Paulding.
Well, James, thank you for sharing a little bit of your misery. I hope this helped you get a little bit off your chest. It was great to have you. And
thank you.
Hopefully the Royals will hold on. You got an ace? You got James Shields?
And don't forget about Jason Vargas.
Jason Vargas. Oh, my God, dude. I do wish the Mexicutioner was still around because that was the greatest nickname of all time. Still is.
That was, but. Yeah, I agree.
All right, Jims. Well, have a good one. Hope Chicago stays warm. And we'll be seeing you soon.
Sounds good. See you, Christian.
All right. Well, the next guest that we have for this My Life as a Sports Fan Has Been Pretty Tough podcast is from what I think is widely considered the most tortured sports city in America, and that would be the pride of Ohio, Cleveland. And the guy that's joining us today, his name is Austin Dempsey. How's it going, Austin?
It's going well, Christian. Happy to be here. Funny talking to you under these circumstances, but still happy to be here.
Yes, yes. So, Austin, you're in your early mid-20s, and you haven't necessarily seen the whole Cleveland terrible everything, but would you say you've had a little bit of a rough go as far as you can remember?
To quote
one of all of our favorite sports writers, Bill Simmons, God hates Cleveland. This summer has shown otherwise, but I feel like that's pretty accurate assessment. It's definitely been a tough run my entire life.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think Cleveland's kind of a little bit of an up and up because, I don't know, you know, like Miss America broke up with you, and then 2 years later was like, I was still in love with you the whole time. I'm coming back. I'm so sorry. Let's do this for real with the LeBron thing. But I don't think it just starts there. I think it's kind of a unique kind of heartbreak, right? Because you guys have been to finals and you have been to World Series, and it falls apart harshly at the biggest stage. So when did you first realize that God hated Cleveland and your life as a Cleveland sports fan was going to be particularly devastating?
My first experience with true heartbreak in sports comes from my tribe. Indians were in the World Series in 95 against the Braves, 97 against the Marlins.
Is that like young Manny? Is that the 95?
That is young man Ram. That is Albert Bell. That is David Justice, Omar Vizquel, Sandy Alomar. I mean, we're talking Hall of Famers here. We're talking, like, to make it to the World Series, we're beating Cal Ripken's Orioles, we're beating Ken Griffey and Randy Johnson's Mariners, like, the golden age of baseball. Ken Griffey slugfest days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's great. And you made it to the World Series twice. Two World Series. That's more than my Dodgers have made in my lifetime. So, it's not all bad, but there was kind of, like, a huge failure in both of those World Series. Yeah.
I mean, if you don't walk away with the series, you lost. And it, both times we were the favorite to win. 95, we were playing one of the greatest pitching staffs. It was Smoltz, Glavin, and Maddox. 97, we were playing no-name Marlins team. Jose Mesa with one of the biggest blown saves in MLB history. But it's every year you came into the season thinking this is going to be the best ball club in Major League Baseball. We're going to have a run at this thing. And from like 93 to like 2003, Jacobs Field was sold out every single game of the year, and they just couldn't sort of cross that final hurdle and could never bring home a championship. And it was that was my first experience with, wow, like we have the talent, but for some reason there's some higher power that's preventing us from winning.
Yeah, did young Austin did he cry when the loss happened, or was it just like more of just a brooding, just general anger at the world when the World Series fell out of your grasp?
I think it's that sort of, for sports fans who have experienced heartbreak, it's that just kind of like jaw drop, like what just happened, like why is this what is going on here. And I was young. I'm 5 and 7. You know, the memories are hazy, but I remember staying up way past my bedtime to watch these games. So, you know, the memories linger.
Totally. Yeah, and then they were, like, you know, competitive for a little while. And then there was a pretty big fall off in, what, mid-2000s for the tribe. Just not a lot going on until that World Series almost appearance.
Yeah, we kind of fell off the map once we lost our core group of guys, our Jim Tomei, our Omar, the guys who really characterized and defined the franchise. And then in 07 was kind of the resurgence. CC Sabathia, Cliff Lee, Travis Hafner. We made it to the ALCS, went up 3-1 on the Red Sox, and Josh Beckett just had our number, just dominated us. They ended up rattling off 3 straight to take the series. Played a terrible Rockies team in the World Series, just annihilated them, and that was kind of the last hurrah for the Indians. I mean, we had a play-in playoff game a year ago, but that's been it.
Like that doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
Yeah. And I feel like the Indians kind of get forgotten in the "we haven't won a World Series in a really long time" conversation. Because, like, you know, the Cubs and then the Red Sox until they got their 3, and even the White Sox are kind of talked about a lot, but the tribe hasn't won since early 1900s.
Yeah. It was 1948, and, you know, when Cubs fans are like, yeah, well, we haven't won, you know, since 1900, it's like, so what? Like, what's that 48 years mean to you, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, I think that would be, you know, that would be something that would be able to be dealt with, except you have another sports franchise in the greater Cleveland area, and that would be the Cavaliers. And I don't think they were ever good when we were kids.
They weren't. You are correct. we had some stunners on our team, though. We had Darius Miles, Ricky Davis, Trajan Langdon, the Alaskan Assassin. Sean Kemp gave it a run.
You guys got fat Sean Kemp, right? Like, Sean Kemp signed a huge deal. Signed a huge deal, showed up like 60 pounds overweight after the lockout.
I mean, I remember going to the Gund Arena pre the cube.
The Gund Arena, what a terrible name.
Pre Comic Sans fonts. And just absolutely no one at the game. And it was, I mean, as a little kid, it was awesome, right? Just running in circles, watching basketball. But, you know, it was some really bad basketball. The jerseys were great. The black and, you know, kind of North Carolina blue.
Yes. Yeah, but then, I mean, then, like, the greatest thing to ever happen to Cleveland sports happened,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
You got the number one overall pick for the hometown kid, LeBron James, the chosen one, King James, LBJ, and then you just don't win one. Go to what, two finals? Three finals?
Yeah, there was the finals against San Antonio when we got swept, and that was just LeBron showing the world that, you know, I might be the greatest player of all time. And then there was also the Cavs just not being able to get over the hump and make it back with, you know, Paul Pierce and KG's Boston, that Orlando Magic team when we took.
Oh, yeah, the Dwight Howard, Jameer Nelson
exactly.
squad.
And that was probably, I think, the biggest. I think that Orlando series, like, you know, the Boston series was big, obviously, and that was what gave LeBron the whole idea of joining up. But, I mean, how just mentally draining is that for a guy who reaches almost superhuman abilities to like get his team to win and just like can't get over that final hurdle?
Yeah. So how bad was the decision, like, in your world? How was that devastating? Did you see it going that way, or did you honestly think he was going to be coming back?
I had heard, everyone has their sources, right? I had heard he wasn't coming back, and as a Cleveland fan, kind of, you know, prepared myself for the worst. It was awful. I mean, it was a huge blunder. It was such a bad blunder that LeBron and his, you know, his camp have publicly recognized that it was a poor way to handle things. Like, sure, raised money, mm-hmm. but imagine if you're an employer, right? Like, Dan Gilbert took a lot of heat, and, you know, his letter was a bit immature, but it was completely in the heat of the moment.
Who the fuck uses Comic Sans,
I don't know,
ever?
Dude, what a power font. If I don't know what kind of move that is. He's just like, you know, sometimes you got to do real weird things, just like make people think, like, oh, I'm not fighting that guy. That guy's nuts. Like, oh, you're going to type in Comic Sans right now? This guy's nuts. But I think that Gilbert was just like, are you kidding me? I gave you the keys to the franchise. I mean, he put all of his buddies up in front office jobs, let them do whatever they want, treated LeBron like, honestly, a partner, like a co-owner. And to just find out with the rest of the country that he's going to Miami, I mean, I think he's angry.
Devastating.
His anger was very justifiable. But yeah, to answer your question, the decision was terrible. I don't blame him for leaving. Like, he's a basketball player, right? He can go wherever he wants. He wanted to win a ring. We don't own him. I never felt that way. And I mean, we really didn't put the talent around him to win. Like, those teams were pretty unimpressive. Granted, he didn't really help recruit the way he's recruited in Miami and now is kind of recruiting in Cleveland.
Well, I mean, how hard is it to sell Cleveland? Like, hard?
I don't.
Like, as a city to live in. Like, if you're a rich basketball player, is it like...
I don't... Unless you're
yeah,
like
I wanna
a guy
live there.
Who's like, you know, like Carmelo, you're like an elite guy who's trying to build a personal brand and you're trying to make a name for yourself beyond the game of basketball, like, think about it. You're playing 86 games. Half of those are at home. And then in the offseason, live wherever you want. You know, it's not like you're stuck there for 365 days a year. And even still, like, I'm from Cleveland. I love it. My family's there. My friends are there. It's a great city. It obviously doesn't have, you know, the charm of a New York and L.A. and Miami and Chicago, but it's still a great city.
Mm-hmm. I feel that. I feel that. How excited are you for what is about to happen in this next basketball season?
Dude, I am so excited. It's I'm just upset it's so far away, but it's going to be really fun to watch. There's a lot of questions I think that everyone has.
Like, how did you guys get 3 number one picks in 4 years? How exactly did that happen? That's a question I have.
It's like a Disney movie, isn't it? Like,
it really is, yeah.
And then we shipped off 2 of them, which, you know, the whole, like, Wiggins love thing, I would have loved to see Wiggins play with LeBron, and I think it would have been great for Wiggins to play with LeBron. But to take a shot, if you have a shot at getting, you know, Kevin Love, who had, what, like, 26 and 12 last year, it's like, has only been, those numbers have only been done, I don't know the stat, like, once or twice for a full season. Like, that guy is a top 10 player in the league. Like, you trade your, you know, unproven rookie in a heartbeat. I don't care who it is, right? You go out and get that guy. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think Kyrie is definitely one of my biggest question marks. He hasn't played a full season of basketball since he was in high school. And it kind of makes sense that he would always sort of pump the brakes for the Cavs because we were never in a playoff hunt. And if he gets a little injured, no need to rush him back. But he's going to have to change his game. I think LeBron's going to be a great influence on him. I think LeBron's a great influence on anyone he plays with. He really makes people play better.
Sure.
But we're projected at 65 wins. Like, I'm excited. It's been 4 years.
That's a ton of wins.
It's a lot. I mean, if you think about it, the Cavs, I was in a mindset where every single night the Cavs played basketball, I was expecting to win. Like, we almost went undefeated at home one season. We just were such a powerhouse with, again, not the greatest, like, personnel in the world, but just, like, LeBron just, like, really was that good. He is that good. Yeah. I'm beyond excited to have him back. Painful 4 years, but cannot wait to have him back.
Totally. Yeah, I would say that Cleveland's on a little bit of the come up, as the kids say, as far as the sports thing go, right? Like, it looked like it was going to be real dark for a while, but this LeBron news kind of out of left field. And then the K-Love move went from a lottery team with, like, some real struggles in front of them to arguably the favorite in the East, which is truly impressive. We haven't talked about the Browns. There is a third team. They just have not been good our whole lives.
They have not been good. There's one playoff appearance in 2002.
Is that Derek Anderson? No,
that wasn't the Derek Anderson year. That was the Kelly Holcomb, I believe, was starting that year. The Derek Anderson year, we won 10 games, and we needed the Indianapolis Colts to beat the Chiefs, I believe, in their last regular season game in order for us to sneak in as a wild card. And they sit Peyton Manning, and they started, like, Jim Sorge or some, like, Curtis Painter. I have no idea.
Some chump.
And, of course, they lose. Of course, eliminating the Browns from the playoffs. But, yeah, the Browns have just really not been able to figure it out. It's been tough.
Oh, man. Yeah, Cleveland sports, just periods of real downness and then just moments of almost greatness. And hopefully you guys get one. Like, I feel like for all the shit Cleveland gets, you guys are really loyal. At least, like, the folks I've met from Cleveland, they're about their teams. You guys are supportive, like you said, sold out Jacobs Field for a decade. The sun should shine on Cleveland, I would say.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that fan base would appreciate it. And I feel a little guilty moving away, but I don't even know what would happen if that city got a ring. And I like to talk about it with my friends and, like, my brother. Like, what team would we want to see it happen to the most? I think right now, under, like, current circumstances, like, the LeBron story would just – that, like, I would love to see the Cavs win one because that would just be one of the greatest stories in sports history. But
sure.
And then you can go, well, the Indians so close, like, 90s, but then the Browns have been so bad and the team left and they came back and they've been awful. Like, you know, kind of NFL is king in the country right now. So, like, I always kind of chose the Browns, but I would take any ring, any sport, love it equally as much. Like,
I think Cleveland Gladiators are making a run in the Arena League right now. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for sharing that experience. And we should talk about LeBron some other time.
Definitely, man. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure venting to you and your loyal readers.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime. And rounding out our tour through people whose sports fandom has ripped their hearts out repeatedly, we are going to go up to the Pacific Northwest and interact with someone who has been a pretty diehard fan of the Seattle sports scene for almost 3 decades now, and was recently vindicated in that fandom. And that would be the one and only Elliot Spellman. Mr. Spellman, how are we doing today?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show here.
No problem. No problem. I've heard you're a little bit under the weather, so there may be some coughs and hacking, perhaps?
Hopefully no hacking. I think we're at a sniffle level and maybe a few throat clearings, but par for the course, I'm sure.
Cool. Well, we are fans of getting better, and hopefully that happens. So speaking of getting better, the Seahawks have gotten a lot better, and they won a Super Bowl.
They did. That happened. Somewhat miraculously, that occurred.
And this was the second Seattle sports championship ever?
Well, really depends where you divide the line on professional sports championship, because the Sonics, former Seattle Supersonics, did win a championship, I think, 77, 78, or 78, 79 season, one of those two. But, of course, the Seattle Storm, the women's basketball team, have won several. I hope it's several. It might just be one. and I believe the Seattle Metropolitans won, like, the 1917 Stanley Cup or something. There's a hockey championship in there way back.
No way, really?
Yeah, so... but yes, in terms of things people care about, this would be the second Seattle sports championship.
Yeah, and I watched that game with you, and I could tell that you had been through a lot as a sports fan, because even when you guys were up by like 20-something points, there was still this feeling of dread, very similar to what the Chiefs fans had that James and I spoke about earlier. But this was the Super Bowl. And is that just from constantly having the rug pulled out from under you?
I think so. I think it you know, it's partly that, and it's partly because there's a feeling around becoming ultimately victorious in a sports championship where the year continues and you never experience sadness ever. And like, not having ever done that before, not having ever had a sports season where there was no sadness felt the entire way through, it's like a glitch in the matrix type situation when you get to the end there, because you don't really know what like emotional place to be at if failure's not going to happen. Then when it becomes clear that success is going to happen, you don't always know how to act. So I think that some of that might have rubbed off. Like, the natural tendency was to prepare for failure a little bit, because that was the only thing I knew how to do. But now, as a winner, I don't know. Maybe I can handle it a little bit better next time. We'll see.
Have a little bit of experience. That's an interesting point, because I think a little contrary to some of the other cities that we discussed today, Seattle has kind of had quite a bit of regular season success across the three major sports. I remember, you know, as a child, the Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, yep, Sonics were consistently winning 50 games. There was a little run of a Ray Allen-led team.
Yep.
The Seahawks have been in a number of playoffs, and the Mariners as well have had their share of in-season success. But it seems like it always ended in the playoffs. I think one of the specific ones is the we want the ball and we're going to score game.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that also occurred. I think it's an interesting point, because like, I'm already on this podcast to make the argument that like, a tortured sports fan base is like inculcated or built by these like very near miss expectations. But I'm not sure that other sports fan bases have that. I think you'll find like, you know, sports fans in Cleveland that haven't maybe they would not cite the like near misses as the source of their sports pain. They would cite the general like ineffectiveness of their teams. I assume.
Sure.
Or maybe, you know, and if you're talking about like the Pittsburgh, like a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, they're not going to go back and talk about the times that they almost won. They're going to say how they missed the playoffs for like 20 years in a row.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm not sure if it's worse to like almost get there and then fail or to just never be close. But I think in terms of generating tortured sports fans, it probably is worse to almost get there because you just get so many 11-year-old kids on these bandwagons and then just crush their dreams.
So dope mojo, man.
I've been on a few of those trains, and let me tell you, tears were shed. Tears were shed. Like, okay, so my prime example of regular season success followed by postseason failure, I think anybody's prime example should be the 2001 Seattle Mariners. They won 116 games. They had the highest winning percentage of any team since the Major League Baseball expanded to 162 games. They were unstoppable. Unstoppable. They like for some reason it just all clicked that year.
Was that like Brett Boone?
Yeah,
Kaz Sasaki.
Yeah, so you had John Olerud, Brett Boone. you had Carlos Guillen. Mike Cameron was out there. I was Ichiro's first year in the league, and he ended up winning the MVP that year.
Yeah,
but like, I mean, it's impossible for a human being to care more about a sporting franchise than I cared about the Seattle Mariners that summer. Because you're a kid, you're in the summer, nothing's really going on. I watched every single game. I went to as many as I could, like, ate up the box score. I knew everybody who was in Triple A at this point. Like, I knew everything about everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they hit the Cleveland Indians in the first round, and they were down 2-1. Somehow they came back. They were very close to losing, like, the divisional playoff. And then they hit the Yankees in the ALCS, and it was just like, it's like Alfonso Soriano's first year or something, and he hit a bomb off Kazuhiro Sasaki when we were already down like 2-1, and it was in New York, and that put it 3-1, and it was just like, ugh. It was just over. It was brutal. And it was also September 11th that had happened that year. So, like, the entire nation was behind the Yankees, which is like one time you play the Yankees, everybody's rooting for them. You felt bad winning the one game that you did because they just kept doing all these montages of like weeping New Yorkers and like firefighters who were standing everywhere. And like, you know, some former Seahawk is throwing out the first pitch for the Mariners and like Rudy Giuliani is throwing out the first pitch for the Yankees. And it's like, wow, we are on an emotional level. We are not competing here. but yeah, so you end up with like truly traumatized, by an ALCS loss, and but then you're hooked, you know, you're so ready for next year and every year thereafter. And it's like, I mean, I'd say the Mariners, first of all, the Mariners have never made the playoffs since then, since 2001, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I would say I'm still a Mariners fan, and every year my Mariners fandom has decreased a little bit from that 2001 high.
Sure.
So, you know, that shows that, like, considering the fact that I still care, that goes to show, like, how deeply ingrained, like, a 12-year-old, 11-year-old true, like, fandom moment can strike you.
Definitely. Yeah. It's interesting the building of the Seattle fandom, because I feel like there was a huge questioning of it, right? With the Sonics thing, I don't think the Seattle fans came out getting like a fair shake in how the fans reacted to the Sonics leaving. Like, there was, you know, a pretty solid movement, but I think that kind of the consensus around the country was that, like, oh yeah, they left because people didn't care about them, which, you know, obviously turned out to not be true. But I do feel like Seattle since then has had this giant chip on their shoulder to prove like how good of fans they are. So now you have like the 12th man and you have the Sounders selling out. And I think it speaks to your point of, you know, like these experiences building. And I know that's maybe like a sore point that you probably don't want to look at more than you have to. But I would posit as an outsider that the Sonics leaving enhanced the fandom of any sort of success by like a tenfold multiplier. How hard was it to watch that all go down?
Well, it was definitely hard. Just like slow moving train wreck with nothing you can do to fix it. But I think that's an interesting point that the Sonics leaving might have galvanized or like shown Seattle like what can happen when you're not a good enough fan. Yeah, I might equate it to like kind of like learning a tough lesson or something. I mean, it's tricky to say if it's true because in the years that since the Sonics have left, the Seahawks have been great and they've, you know, probably the most vocal, loud fans in the NFL, but the Mariners have been horrible and the Mariners fans have not shown up at all. So I think like it's a combination of factors. I think it's more like you just have this fan base that's so ready to win at something that they'll hop on a bandwagon faster than most might be able to. They're ready to go, but they're like I don't think the Sonics leaving has made people more of Mariners fans since they've continued to lose and stuff. So yeah, that'd be my 2 cents there. But yeah, Seattle does know how to throw a good bandwagon party, and I don't mean that in a bad or negative way. I think it gets portrayed that way sometimes.
Featuring Macklemore.
Yeah. Because it's you don't think of Seattle as a sports town. Like at least I don't.
Not compared to like New York or like.
Well, I think of like Rust Belt cities as like sports towns, it's like Detroit and Chicago and Cleveland, Cincinnati, things like that. Okay. I think that feeling comes from not having how would I phrase it? Like sports are the focus of a town, and I think that happens in Boston a little bit too. I think Seattle might be there now. It might have become one. Like everybody knows and cares about the Seahawks, and it's like every single person in the city of Seattle cares. And so, like maybe it crossed a little threshold or something. It's totally pervasive if you go there. Like everything involves the Seahawks somehow.
Sure.
So it's interesting.
And there's a breaking point. I feel that way about San Francisco, actually. When the Giants are really good, everybody cares. And when they're not, it's just like more of a different place for other things that happens to have a baseball team.
Yeah. I think that Seattle and San Francisco have a lot of similarities. With San Francisco maybe having like a healthier attitude towards success, having experienced it before, not going as like stark crazy. But yeah, definitely similar. But I think for the last year or two since the Seahawks have been what they are, like I think you can safely characterize Seattle as a sports town in the same way that Boston is. Like everybody knows what's going on. Everybody's a fan. Everybody has some kind of like tangential relation to the game. Everybody watches the games. It's like it's all consuming and I think with that taste of success, maybe Seattle's moving away from like the tortured sports fan bases and towards the like sports town fan bases.
Okay.
So
like the established one that is legitimate.
Yeah, a little more legitimate.
It takes a championship, I guess, right? Because Boston was in that tortured fan base until the Red Sox won. It seemed like Boston fans had the right to bitch and complain about how hard it was. But once you win one, you're supposed to learn.
Yeah, maybe there's two kinds of sports towns. There's like the tortured sports town, and then there's the content sports town. Like San Francisco, a content sports town.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Mariners are currently, like, tied for a wild card position.
They are. They are.
And they have Felix Hernandez.
They're doing great.
Who is going to be like probably the best guy to throw out in a one-game
playoff. Yeah, I'm figuring out how to dip my toe back into these emotional waters right now because...
Oh, really?
Like, my main strategy is I check the scores every night, but, like, the next step would be actually watching some of these games, and I don't know if it's their year. Like, I don't want to hop on and get burned, but maybe that's... I don't know. I'm paying attention, though. I am.
There's a quarter of the season left. You can wait, like, a couple more weeks before you make that decision.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that if we were to make the playoffs, we'd probably beat out the Kansas City Royals. So, you know, I think that would just be great all the way around. They'd get to continue being a tortured fan base, and we'd get to continue our recent run of success.
And all would be well in the world.
Yeah, the rich would get richer. It'd be as it's supposed to be. But hopefully, awesome. Actually, hopefully, we both get in and Detroit loses, but that doesn't seem likely. They have, like, the fucking monstars of a starting rotation.
Yeah, they really do. They really do. Hey, man, well, thank you for the time. I appreciate a little walk down memory lane, and it does sound like you are really, really on the other side of the corner of happiness for your sports fandom, and I think that's healthy. I think I'm happy for you. And I hope it continues because I do think Seattle, it's good when they win.
Yeah,
it's a nice place.
Definitely, I think I'm like the 18, 19 year old kid who recently lost his virginity and thinks he knows everything about the world of women now. That's what I would equate my attitude to be. Like, oh no, here's how you gotta do it.
I feel like that's a great analogy, and I mean I think you know how the rest goes. So hopefully the 20 through 25 is a good run.
Yes, go Russell Wilson.